I don't really want to talk about this virus today, but I have to because I don't really want to see them get away with their plan. I don't want their plan to work. And right now, it seems to be getting to sort of peak insanity about it. And if they're going to hang on to this narrative, this pandemic narrative, then I can predict the future. They're going to tell us that, hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people are dying around the world. And what they want in the end is they want governments to hand over control of that whole segment of their society, like the whole healthcare segment, really, to an international body, namely the World Health Organization. So we're going to talk about it today because I feel like we have to. Okay, what I've got to show you, a few things, a few clippings from the news, older news stories, older public announcements from different organizations. And then I'm going to show you clips from a conference that was held, a conference called Event 201. It was held in December 2019. And then at the end, I guess we'll just wrap up with a look at the Wuhan name story. Okay, I may think of other things as we go along to talk about, but as we go through this evidence that I'm going to show you, I want you to remember other videos I've done, especially the one called "PsyOps Goes Mainstream." I think I put the title. In that, I talked about a company called SCL out of England who created fake news so that the fake news could be used to control the public. The Slate magazine article is called "You Can't Handle the Truth." It is one of the most important news magazine articles that I think anybody can read to understand how the news operates these days. The news is just a great big marketing firm for globalism, in my opinion. And I think that this coronavirus thing is a part of it. Why do I say that? How can I be so sure? Haven't I seen the leaked video from China? People will ask me. Yeah, I have, and I happen to know that China is on total internet lockdown. It has been for a long time. So ask yourselves how so many videos got snuck out, got leaked. How did that happen? Do you think? How did some doctor in the midst of dealing with a viral outbreak who was sick himself, how did he get around the internet firewalls and get his videos out? It's a good question. Maybe you need a little more convincing, so check this out from 2017. World Bank launches first ever pandemic bonds to support $500 million pandemic emergency financing facility. This is from June 28th, 2017. Bonds for a pandemic. The only reason they would do that is if they thought they were going to be able to make a lot of money off a pandemic sometime in the near future. And voila. Not very long after, not even 2 years after, not even a year and a half after. This all proves very fortuitous for the World Bank. And then there's something called Event 201. My friend over at Quite Frankly Podcast, great show, by the way, on YouTube, Frank broke this story as far as I know. Johns Hopkins Initiative hopes to better prepare for pandemics. This is from December 11th, 2019. And they talk about a team of experts at the Center for Security at Johns Hopkins University staging an exercise. They dreamed up doomsday scenarios. It says for the most recent exercise called Event 201, which was held in New York City in October, the Center for Health Security partnered with the World Economic Forum and Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation to engage 15 leaders in business, government, and public health to model response to a worldwide coronavirus pandemic. It's something to take note of. got the treasury bond, or the, sorry, the pandemic bonds from the World Bank, and now we have this exercise focusing on coronavirus, sponsored by all the usual suspects. Bill and Melinda Gates, the World Economic Forum, and more. It included representatives from the UN Foundation, United Nations, the World Bank, China's Center for Disease Control and Prevention, the Central Intelligence Agency, the U.S. Center for Disease Control, and other leaders from travel, banking, pharmaceutical, and healthcare services industries. Johns Hopkins, remember, sponsored this, hosted it. Johns Hopkins is closely associated with Bloomberg, Bloomberg News. Yep, that Bloomberg. All these guys participating in this exercise, this pandemic exercise. And look, from The Intercept, this woman says, when Bloomberg News' reporting on China was challenged, Bloomberg tried to ruin me for speaking out. All these people cozy with China, and China's the place we're getting the most propaganda about the disease. I just don't understand why so many people are believing everything that China is saying. Why would you do that? And when all the blue checks unite and they use the same language and they have the same level of fear-mongering, you should know by now that it's probably a propaganda operation. This is the event that they're talking about, Event 201. I won't bother to read this. It's just a description of why they're doing this pandemic planning exercise. But I do want to introduce you to a couple of the players involved in it. So that's what they call them, by the way, because this is a doomsday scenario gaming session, basically, gaming it out. So they call them the players. One of the players is Timothy Grant Evans. He used to be at the World Bank, and that's the title they've given him for this pandemic planning meeting. They say Timothy Evans, formerly of the World Bank. He was also the Assistant Director General at the World Health Organization, Director of the Health Equality Team at Rockefeller Foundation, and Assistant Professor in International Health Economics at the Harvard School of Public Health. Sounds pretty swampy. We've also got this guy, Stephen C. Redd, who is at the Centers for Disease Control now, and he used to be in the military in the United States. And we have Matthew J. Harrington, Global Chief Operating Officer at Edelman, an industry-leading communications firm that partners with businesses and organizations to evolve, promote, and protect their brands and reputations. There's a lot of those guys floating around. And basically what he is a super glorified public relations guy. And he knows all the tricks of how to make sure a company's reputation stays intact. And I guess that would, basically he oversees messaging, right? He oversees messaging. And there were other people. There were other people at this thing as well, but I'm going to leave them out for now because, and the reason I introduced you to those three in particular is because I'm going to show you video clips from this Event 201. They filmed the whole thing. They filmed everything they did. And they even have propaganda pieces that they put together to show during this scenario planning event. So I'll show you a little bit of those too. The first one that I wanted to show you is the opening statement from the rep from the World Economic Forum. Just have a listen.
And before we begin the exercise, I also want to introduce Ryan Morehard, who's lead of the Global Health Security Group at the World Economic Forum, and he will say a few words.
And good morning and welcome again on behalf of the Center for Health Security, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, and the World Economic Forum. Welcome to Event 201. 201. Throughout our session today, I hope that number will represent two dimensions of our work to strengthen global health security. First, today, there are 200 epidemic events every year, and it hasn't always been this way. The number is increasing. driven by globalization, climate change, urbanization, deforestation, and other trends of our modern world.
Interesting that he said that globalization is largely to blame for increasing numbers of pandemics. It's astonishing they can stand there and defend their way of life, their insane push for globalizing everything, putting everything under central control and moving goods across the world instead of having things produced locally. And yet they say it's responsible for pandemics. We have more and more pandemics. Great. Sounds great. The next clip is from Tim Evans. He's from the World Bank. At the beginning, what he seems to be saying is, look, I'm getting impatient. We have these scenarios, we have these drills, we have these seminars, and nothing changes. You know, we need to go back and pressure people to get the finance and get the money for pandemic preparedness. It reminds me of the PNAC document, Project for a New American Century, prior to 9/11. They wrote that the only thing that will give them the policy changes they want is a new catalyzing event, like a new Pearl Harbor. That's what the words they used. And then months later, 9/11 happened, which was like a new Pearl Harbor. Well, you'll hear this guy, Timothy, say almost the same kind of thing, like, yeah, we talk big, but we never do anything. And then he says something really interesting towards the end, which I'll talk about when he finishes. Have a listen.
What I worry about is that these last two comments, which is everybody gets excited around a table like this in the moment, and then you move on, and it's back to business as usual. And it's this panicked and neglect problem that we have, which is very difficult to prospectively develop real preparedness. So I think there should be somewhere, maybe it's out of the GPMB, and a number of people here are the Global Preparedness Monitoring Board, there should be a time-bound plan with very clear targets with respect to what would constitute a new level of global preparedness. And we should look at what's required to get that financed in such a way that it's not purely, you know, the goodwill of everybody coming together occasionally because they're at Davos or they're in New York, but that it has some real accountability to agents that lie behind or are advocating for a stronger global governance, but a practical one.
So his big concern was finance. He wanted money. He wants every country to cough up to a central fund to finance this pandemic overseeing body, which will probably be the World Health Organization. And if you notice, what he said was, for those of us that lie behind, that advocate for increasing global governance. What does that mean? That means removing power from sovereign individual nations and giving it to a world body, giving it to a globalist organization. So you see, they hate Trump so much because he has said point blank on many occasions, we want nationalism, not globalism. And these guys are all about globalism and globalization. All right, here's the next clip.
The other thing I would just comment is that an event like this is going to be outside of the health sphere. And so it'll be really important that this not be seen as a health event, but really as a global crisis. And that
was Stephen Redd, the guy from the CDC. The guy from the CDC just said that a pandemic shouldn't be seen as a health event. You heard it with your own ears. You understanding my thesis that this isn't about, that these people don't care about health? The third clip, it has to do, it begins with a woman in the background. She's the moderator, and she says something like, do you want to take, do you have any thoughts on the data piece? And then the guy who talks goes off in a totally different direction. But I want to pointed out, because she asked a question that I've cut out. She says, you know, does we have this ability to gather data so quickly now and collate it and put algorithms to use to figure things out, track the spread and all of that. And she asks the whole panel that's there, what do you think about you how we can use data towards stopping the pandemic? And you know, it's crickets. They don't want to take it on. Why wouldn't they have thought of this? And why wouldn't they have invited somebody who's an expert on this? You would think with this technology that we have, we could at least use it to monitor the spread of the disease, right? They don't have anything to say about that. Wasn't part of their agenda. So just listen to the whole clip. Don't worry about the data thing, but do pay attention to the fact that the guy just says, yeah, that's important. I'm going to use it as a jumping off point to talk about something else. Okay, just listen.
Those parts.
Any other thoughts on the data piece? Go ahead.
Well, I think the data is critical, but I'll use that to segue to another area, if I may, which is the human resource. And a key actor, given that I now have moved to academia, but it is the academic or the training sector. Because if we're really going to develop the surge capacity for something like this, where you're going to have to bring in the reserves, the global health reserves in some respect, it requires an incredible coordination across training institutions.
So he's in academia now, after being at the World Bank and the World Health Organization before that. And he says, hey, we need to coordinate all the training facilities for healthcare providers so that they're on message, so that they know what the global body response to pandemics should be. I feel like saying, how dare he right now? Every country should be able to deal with these things locally. It's the local response that matters. And we're going to talk about the local response right now when we look at the next clip. This is Matthew Harrington from the PR firm Edelman. Just listen to what he has to say.
I wanted to follow up on the trusted voice idea.
Yeah.
I think everyone around the table spoke about how important it is to find those voices. Do we need to find them now and establish trust in those voices now so that when the crisis hits, people already have the established trust? Thoughts?
I mean, I would say without question, and because you're in a better position to build up that bank of goodwill in advance of a crisis. And I'm very intrigued and I think very heartened by the conversation about the identification of community and faith-based leaders in particular, because they do foster enormous trust at a local level. And that
Oh, he's very intrigued by the idea of approaching local community leaders and faith leaders because they have a whole bunch of trust built up. The public trusts them. I find that very sad and cynical. I suppose if I weren't so jaded, I might say, yes, that's a really good idea. You know, approach these people so that you have established a contact with them in advance. However, do you think they're just trying to get names and contact numbers? Or do you think that they're thinking more along the lines of, let's bring them to a bunch of seminars. Maybe we'll fly them over to Belgium for a week long or a month long training session, and then we'll deploy them out into their local communities. And then at times exactly like this right now out there about talking about the virus, we can tell them what the message is. We can get in touch with them and tell them what to say. What do we want to hear them say? What do we want them to encourage people to do? Because people will trust them, right? And I don't know about you, but I am noticing people all over the place who, over the last few years, have built up some credibility with an audience in different areas, and they are non-stop fear-mongering about the coronavirus. Non-stop. It's just article after article, admonishment after admonishment, insult after insult, berating, fear. I wonder if some of these people haven't been contacted already in advance by organizations like this and asked if they wouldn't be one of these community leaders, community spokespeople. Okay, and finally, this guy that I'm about to show you, his name is Brad Connett, and he is from Henry Schein. Henry Schein is a medical device, a medical supply company, and he's a corporate guy. Apparently he was, and he'll say this in the clip, he's just a guest of the panel. He wasn't part of the planning committee and the actual gaming out scenario. And boy, in my opinion, it really shows that he's from a different milieu, a different mindset than the rest of them. Because listen, I mean, what he says here blows me away because it exposes the panel yet again. It exposes their agenda. Just listen to what he says.
Yeah. Similar lines, maybe, but in the spirit of kind of learning from history, in 1918, 16 million people died. That was more than the two great wars. And one of the impending results was a massive shortage of physicians, care providers. So I don't see that on the list. I don't have a solution. If you ask me what we do about it, that would be a subcommittee of this wonderful committee, which I'm only a guest of, so I'm not taking credit for it. But the shortage of physicians is looming anyway in the United States. I don't know about the broader world, but that's something should be considered in this. And second point I would only make is that if it really were catastrophic, I don't know if we're prepared for the civil unrest that could result in it. And we haven't really talked much about our public safety vehicles, not just public safety avenues ready, including military. Are they ready for such civil unrest if it were really to get out of hand? I don't see those in the recommended actions. That's all.
Astonishing in this whole well-planned panel, put together by the World Economic Forum, the United Nations Foundation, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. There's people from the World Bank, CDC, a couple of CDCs, China's CDC, the United States CDC, PR firms, communications experts, and people who have apparently been involved in disaster planning for decades or more. None of them thought about physician shortages or healthcare provider shortages. None of that didn't come up. As the guy says, I don't see that on your list. Wow. And also missing from the list is any talk of public safety or what to do about civil unrest that could result if this thing gets bad. What kind of experts are these? They're the kind of experts that have an agenda in mind. And that agenda was told to you right off the start by Timothy Evans, and that's to get financing for a world body to oversee the pandemic response. That's what it's all about. They don't really care about people. They just see a giant trough of money that they can always throw out there. They can always throw out some propaganda, some fear videos, clips that they can fake in their back rooms, and they can send out the message to all their subservient mainstream media talking heads. Look, tomorrow we're going to talk about the virus has got a hockey stick graph that it's spreading. It's going to spread to millions of people by a month from now. You notice them all saying the same thing? And by the way, this is a good place to revisit the whole point about the name of the virus changing all of a sudden. Look at a blue check. David Gura. For your information, calling COVID-19 the, quote, Wuhan virus is racist. Give me a break. They're going to say, see, everything they don't like, they call racist so that we stop doing it. But it's wearing thin. People are done. I was looking online underneath these guys' videos, the Event 201 videos that they've posted on YouTube. Nobody's buying it. Nobody is buying their shenanigans. And look, David Gura happens to be from MSNBC, and NBC News by way of Bloomberg TV. And another panelist at Event 201 happened to be Hasti Tagi from NBC News. She was on their panel. Hasti Tagi? What can we call our cool journalist girl that'll catch on with the young ones? Hashtag? Well, no, that's a little obvious. Okay, Hasti Tagi? What an unfortunate name if that name is real. I hope you guys see that this pandemic is brought to you by NBC, Bloomberg, China, the World Economic Forum, the World Bank, United Nations, CIA, and Bill and Melinda Gates. Event 201. Their pandemic planning exercise that they did in October 2019, that made it out in that article in December 2019, and then boom, it happens in real life. Just before we go, I want to play you a couple of clips of the fake news that they made on purpose to be played at Event 201. I just listen to it and tell me if it doesn't sound like the real news right now.
Twitter and Facebook are reporting they've identified and deleted a disturbing number of accounts dedicated to spreading disinformation about the outbreak. For more on this, we go to our correspondent, Catalina Parks.
Chen, these accounts were created by several state-sponsored groups intending to sow political discord, and some individuals are seemingly seeking to gain financial advantages. Violence against healthcare workers and minority populations has been increasing. A recent riot highlights the real danger in these posts.
The task of identifying every bad actor is immense. And experts agree that new disinformation campaigns are being generated every day. This is a huge problem that's going to keep us from ending the pandemic and might even lead to the fall of governments, as we saw in the Arab Spring. If the solution means controlling and reducing access to information, I think it's the right choice.
The outcome of the CAPS pandemic in Event 201 was catastrophic. 65 million people died in the first 18 months. The outbreak was small at first and initially seemed controllable, but then it started spreading in densely crowded and impoverished neighborhoods of megacities. From that point on, the spread of the disease was explosive. Within 6 months, cases were occurring in nearly every country. The global economy was in a free fall. The GDP down 11%. Stock markets around the world plummeted between 20 and 40% and headed into a downward cycle of fear and low expectation.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but that is what they're saying is going to happen now, too. There's probably a real flu, but I just don't think it's anything to worry about. I think that if you get scared, then you're allowing them to get away with the plans that they want. You got to stop. I mean, what you do is of no consequence to them, but what's going to be of consequence to all of us is if we buy their game, and then we start joining in this chorus that says that the United States under President Trump is taking all the wrong actions. That could change the election. And we can't afford, the world can't afford for Donald Trump to lose the next election, in my opinion. I know people don't like that, but the people that don't like that generally can't even put two and two together. I've just given you two and two. And does this equal four? It does to me. All right, I'm going to stop talking now. Thanks a lot for listening, everybody. I hope this has put your mind at ease a little bit. I hope it's given you something to think about. I'll leave some links in the description box so you can go and see some of this stuff for yourself. And also, I'm going to put a link to my paypal.me if you would like to help me continue to do this work. Say thank you to me. You can send me a financial contribution that way or send me a letter or cash check through the mail if you are so inclined. I'd love to get your gifts and notes and cards, and they're all up on a board in my living room. It's really great. Until next time, everybody, peace out.